Welcome. Today, we're discussing an interesting content about the art of giving feedback to teenagers and how to do it without the conversation ending in a slam door.
Oh, the slam door. The eye rolls, the heavy sighs. It's a universal language, isn't it? You try to offer some helpful advice, and it's like you've just declared war.
Exactly. You say something you think is completely neutral, like, hey, you forgot your homework. And they snap back with, why are you always on my case? It's so frustrating.
It really is, because you're not trying to attack them. You're genuinely trying to help. So what's the disconnect? Why do they hear something so different from what we're actually saying?
That is the core question. And the answer, according to developmental psychologists like Dr. David Yeager, is that teens don't just hear our words. They read into them. They're hypersensitive to how others see their level of competence.
So when I say, this project you rushed isn't your best work, they're not hearing, you can do better next time.
Precisely. They're hearing, I've let you down, or even worse, maybe I'm just not good enough. That criticism triggers a defensive mode. Their brain just shuts down to protect itself from what feels like a personal attack or rejection.
Wow, that makes so much sense. It's not about defiance, it's about defense. The example with Andy, the boy who failed his math test, is heartbreaking. His dad says, you clearly didn't study hard enough. But Andy did study. He just had test anxiety.
Exactly. And in his head, he's thinking, I guess my dad just thinks I'm dumb. The feedback didn't motivate him. It absolutely crushed him. It confirmed his worst fears about himself.
So we're accidentally crushing their spirits when we think we're trying to build them up. Okay, this is a little depressing. Is there a way to fix this? Is there a better way?
There is, and it's backed by research. Dr. Yeager's team ran a study where they gave students feedback on essays. But for one group, they added one single sentence at the end. Just one.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat. What's the magic sentence?
The sentence was, I'm giving you these comments because I have very high expectations and I know that you can reach them.
Whoa, that lands differently, completely differently.
Doesn't it? And get this, the students who received that one extra line were 3 times as likely to revise and improve their essays. 3 times.
That's incredible. So, why does it work so well? What's the psychology behind it?
It perfectly combines 2 critical elements, high standards and high belief. The high standards part says, this isn't good enough yet. But the high belief part immediately follows up with, but I know you have what it takes to get there. I believe in you.
I see. So you're not lowering the bar for them, but you're giving them the confidence to jump over it. It's not about criticism. It's about a vote of confidence.
You've got it. It shifts the entire message from, you failed to meet the standard, to, I am so confident you can meet this standard that I'm taking the time to guide you. It turns a confrontation into a conversation.
Okay, this is great in theory, but how do we apply this in the heat of the moment, like with the messy room or the forgotten chore? Is there a formula?
There is a fantastic 4-step formula we can use. Let's walk through it. Step 1. State the issue clearly and without judgment. Not, your room is a disaster zone, but the deadline for the assignment wasn't met. See the difference? Factual, not emotional.
Okay, just the facts. I can do that. What's step 2?
Step 2. Affirm your belief in them. This is key. But I know you're capable of getting back on track. You're immediately injecting that high belief.
Right. Connecting the problem to their potential. I like it. And 3?
Step 3. Reinforce the standard. Meeting deadlines is still important. This shows you're not letting them off the hook. The standard still matters. And finally, step 4, offer support. Can we talk about what happened? Let me know if there's anything I can do to support you.
So let's try it with the dishwasher. My teen forgets to load it 2 days in a row. My instinct is to say, you're so forgetful and unreliable.
But using the formula, you'd say something like, the dishwasher wasn't loaded yesterday or the day before. That's step 1, the fact. This affects the rest of the family. That's step 3, the standard. But I know you can be dependable, and I believe you can do better. There's step 2, the belief. Then you can add step 4, if needed.
Okay, I have to admit, that feels a lot more constructive. But what if they're being unreliable? Is it wrong to point that out? Aren't we just sugarcoating it?
That's a fair question. The difference is focusing on the behavior versus labeling the person. Saying the dishwasher wasn't loaded is an observation of a behavior. Saying you are unreliable is a judgment of their character. The first invites a solution. The second invites a defense.
Ah, I see. Behavior versus identity. By not attacking their identity, you leave room for them to change their behavior without feeling like they are a bad person.
You nailed it. What you're really telling them deep down is this. You can do hard things. You are not defined by your mistakes. You can learn and grow. You're building their internal motivation.
This really reframes everything. It's not about winning an argument or just getting the chore done. It's about teaching them resilience and self-belief in a way that actually works.
Exactly. When you deliver feedback with belief and respect, it doesn't crush them. It can actually lift them up and motivate them to keep making progress. It's a true game changer. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in.
Goodbye.